Thank you again to everybody that's read, that's helped us open the meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And that's a welcome to any visitors to us this evening, and a huge welcome to anyone that's new to NA that might be in our meeting tonight. And we do hope that you hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Like I said, we are a speaker meeting tonight. Our speaker is going to speak for 40 or 45 minutes. And I'm going to hand you over to Michael, who's going to introduce our speaker tonight. So, Michael, over to you.
I'm an addict named Michael. And
Hi, Michael.
Hello. The speaker tonight is not just somebody who I know very well. He's one of those people who I try with inclusion of my sponsor, I trust with my life, and you know, he's very easy to talk to, and most certainly one of the greatest assets of my recovery since I've moved to the UK, come to think of it, in my whole recovery since my sponsor. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. T.
Thank you very much, Michael. Hello, my name is Aril, and I'm an addict.
Hi,
welcome.
I'm not very used to being speaker, and also I haven't been to a lot of meetings lately. I have to be honest about that. Life kind of happens, and sometimes I have to prioritize, and due to change in my employment, I now have to work extra shifts, so like unplanned, where they call me, and yeah, fate has had it so, made it so that I haven't been to many meetings lately, but I mean physical meetings. But I will tell my story. I was asked to tell my story, and I hope it will last for 45 minutes. It certainly lasted me for 48 years, so why not? I was born into a pretty normal working class family in Norway. Well, I say pretty normal. I always say that, but I'm not sure if it was. My father was what I would call a rageaholic. He's also an alcoholic, but he's dry now. And my mother was an enabler for him. And my sisters, well, my older sister were just as damaged as me from this relationship to my father, basically. At a very early age, I learned how to adapt to this, so I wouldn't have to feel the shame. I found friends that were living pretty far from where I lived. I had to walk quite a bit to get there. This was strategic for me, so they wouldn't be at my home very often, because basically just being there would be enough to be in trouble a lot of times. If the shoes weren't in a certain order in the hall, or the clothes were lying in a pile, or just for having a smile on your face in the wrong situation could be enough for even friends of mine to be in trouble with my father. I'm not going to go on about my father, not right now. But I grew up to be a very angry young man. I could be really angry because, well, I learned that from somewhere. I was probably 15 years, first time I tried a legal drug, alcohol, and for me, that was kind of a revelation, because that knot in my stomach and the fear and everything just disappeared right away. I could be someone else other than me. That was freedom. It felt very liberating. I made friends who I always changed friends. The people I was hanging out with, I would change them out by every 3 years. Always go to new friends. Always choosing friends where I would be in a direction towards using drugs. First, I chose friends who were smoking. Then the friends that were smoking weren't doing anything else, so I would move to other friends who had were using alcohol. And first time I was trying the illegal drugs were even more, because I love that even more. It was my friend at the first moment. Because I started out doing it because I wanted to, but I ended up doing it because I had to. You all know the story about this, but for me, it turned into kind of like I needed a certain drug to go to sleep. I needed a certain drug to wake up. I needed a certain drug to be able to eat, to be able to relax, to be able to go to the toilet. There was always a drug that would make me into what I wanted to be. I don't know how to say this in Norwegian, but I'm not sure how to put it in English, but it was like everybody else were living life on life's terms, but I couldn't do that, kind of. It was like I needed something more to be able to do that. Like going to work, having a steady job, I needed drugs to do that. I actually got a job. I was coming down actually at the interview, and I got the job. And only reason I wanted the job was because my unemployment benefit was running out, so I had to get a job so I could get more money. That was my how should I say my priority. But I got this job, and it was in the health services. I was working with people who have been in traffic accidents. I was working with people who were mentally challenged. And it was through this where I, for the first time in my life, actually got something that was, how should I say this? It was like having the responsibility for other people's well-being gave me something. There is a word, phrase in Norwegian where we say that by washing other people, you yourself become clean. And for me, that was something that I was thinking a lot about the first time I got clean, because it affected me. My work affected me in a way where I understood that I couldn't do this work for a long time without letting people down because I was using drugs. It all came to a peak at it was the night between the 16th and the 17th of October 2006. And I had been at work, working the evening shift until 11 o'clock, and then I was out getting my drugs. And I was supposed to be at work again in the morning the next day. And it took longer than it usually did, because, and for some reason I was back home again like 4 or 5 in the morning, and I was supposed to be back at work at 8. And the drugs I was using at the time was the ones that kept me awake, you know, and I was lying in bed trying to just close my eyes and get a little bit of relaxation before I was going to work. And I was really feeling bad because the combination of the stay awake drugs and the other drugs I was taking at the time have side effects. And the side effect is that it creates false memories. And I was struggling with all this shit in my head where I did not know where it came from, and I couldn't recognize myself in it. And it was like I could get a thought in my head, like, what would happen if I punched that guy in the face? And at the same second that I thought that, it was like I didn't know if I had done it or not. It was the barriers between reality and imagination was like I didn't know the difference. And I was lying awake that night in the morning, and we all heard the phrase that you know, there is no atheists in foxholes, and I know how that feels. That night, I was like, I have done this hundreds of times before. Like, please, God, you know, if you exist, please help me. Because I know I've said this 100 times before, but this time, if you really help me, I will do it, you know. And for the first time, I actually realized that what I was saying was there was some kind of truth to it, because the thing I was always talking about was I wanted something, some higher power to come and bail me out, but I didn't want to do the work that I promised him to do if he did. And this time I realized that, you know, you just have to do it. And the thought, just the thought of not using drugs anymore was at that moment, it felt like a liberation, a revelation. It was like, wow, why have I never thought of this before? You know, I can do this, you know, I want to do this. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired and all that, you know. And before I was supposed to go to work that morning, I called in sick. I called in sick for 2 days in advance. On Monday morning, on Sunday, I decided that on Monday morning I will go to my boss and I will tell her like it is. And I did. I thought that she would fire me on the spot, but she didn't. She just said that, okay, we'll make an appointment with this office. I was working for the municipal, and in that workplace, they have this office. I do not know what to call this in English, but anyway, I was there to talk to them, and they put me on drug tests. On the 28th of December. No, 23rd of December, 2006, I was clean from any drugs. But, you know, I kept going to these meetings with these people, and they took urine tests. And she said that, you know, she wasn't used to working with addicts. She was working with all kinds of people who were in trouble, you know, for all kinds of stuff. So she said that, you know, we cannot deny you to drink alcohol. We cannot, because it's legal. But we will fire you if you come with a hangover or drunk at work. The moment she said that, I was already planning to drink responsibly. Just because he said that. I don't know why that happened, but it's probably because I'm an addict. I wanted to drink responsibly, and I made this plan. I made all these rules for drinking. You know, it's like I will only drink one time every 2 months, and you know, it. I did that, and then 2 months became 1 month, 1 month, and it became 2 weeks, and then it was like the week of my birthday. I had been drunk every night for a week. So, in 2007, the 25th of August, I was clean again for the first time, and I started going to NA meetings. That is now 13 years and 2 months and 13 days today. Yeah, that was the part of my new life. At my first meeting, I met my sponsor. He wasn't my sponsor at that meeting, and it took me a year before I asked him. But he really got me through the worst of it. It's like one time I had to put one of my cats to sleep. I was certain I was going to get high that evening. I called my sponsor and I went to a meeting. When I was 4 years clean, I was arrested by the police. I was arrested by the police for shooting an air gun outside my house. They thought that it was someone that called in and was very well. They thought it was a real gun or something. And the police came and arrested me with handcuffs and everything, dragged me down to the police station. And I was sure I was going to use that night as well. But I called my sponsor. He got me out of it. I didn't use. I was scared stiff. I still have PTSD or whatever you call it from that, you know. Having contact with the police. I never talked to the police while I was using, but I got arrested 4 years clean with guns to my head. And it was really something that scared me. I pretend sometimes that it doesn't, but it did. Yes, NA really saved me. NA for me was like coming home. All those stories, you know, it's like I really don't could never have expected anything like NA happening to me if you had asked me before I got clean. The love, everything there, it makes me certain that there has to be a higher power somewhere just because this exists. I want to talk a little bit about myself, what I call my self-therapy in my recovery. And I always do things that I didn't get to do enough when I was a child or young. Like I started skateboarding, I started I bought mopeds, and I wanted to, and I juiced them up so they would go faster. And I was really, you know, playing around with that when a friend of mine who was riding a motorcycle, he was saying that, why don't you just, oh, just a second. He told me that, why do you do all this stuff? Why don't you get a real motorcycle? You know, and I was thinking that this is me being trapped, you know, inside my head. I never even thought about that, you know. It's like, yeah, why don't I do that? So I got the license and I got myself a motorcycle, and this has been the thing that really turned my life around. I started traveling. In 2015, I took my motorcycle from the door of my house to Sarajevo in Bosnia, all the way on a motorcycle. And I've been to Ukraine, Croatia, Slovenia, Slovakia, Hungary, all over the place. And the thing that in these countries, I meet the fellowship. In these countries, I find the same beautiful thing that this fellowship is. And like I say a lot of times that about the members in NA, it's like I may not like them, every one of them, but I will love them. And this is a very special principle for me because even if there's a person in my home group that I really don't actually like, if he calls me and says that I need someone to talk to, or I'm gonna start using again, or I have problems, I need to talk to someone, I will be there. You know, because that's what I call the unconditional love. You know, I may not have to like you, but I do have to love you. I'm sorry, I have to all think in Norwegian before I speak, so I am kind of slow with this, so I hope you can be patient with me. I want to talk a little bit more about my father because I decided that I wanted to forgive my father for everything. So I made a plan. I made a plan that every time I went there to visit my father and mother, I would hug them when I leave. Up until then, I had really been kind of obnoxious because I hated him so bad that I wanted to bust him on being wrong in something. And by being so hanging over him, I usually ended up being wrong as well. So I decided that I would hug him every time I left, both him and my mother. So I started doing that. And then I decided I want to say to my father that I love him. I was already doing that with my mother. And so that wasn't a problem, but I wanted to do this with my father, and I did. And I was doing it like I was, I wanted to love him, but I was also doing it to mess with his head a little bit. You know, I wanted to show him that I was better than him or something. But what happened was that in 1 minute, my father said more about his feelings than I had ever heard him say, like for 10 years in a row. Because I said, "I love you, father. I love you, dad." And he said that, and that I love you too, and I respect. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of what you have become, and I like your opinions. And yeah, it was probably more he said, but I can't really remember now. But the way he spoke to me was like I was the one who was had my head messed with, to be honest. I'm sorry, my English is a little bit rusty right now. So after that, a process started to happen with me because I started seeing my father and seeing him as a person and not just as a father. It kind of kindled the love that I never had for him. And now When I go to visit my parents, I hug them when I come, I say I love them, and then I hug them when I go again. And this probably started something with my father as well, because when he got dry from his drinking, that was like in the 90s, he made a very general apology. He is from, he was in the other fellowship, and the way they do it where I'm from is that they don't really work the steps, you know. They, for some reason, they find a reason not to do it. And my father was like a very general apology for my childhood, basically. And I was using it at the time, so I said, like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It wasn't that bad. You're forgiven. And I didn't mean it because, you know, that's how I was as an active addict. And just a few months ago, he called me up just out of the blue and said that, you know, Adil, I want to apologize for what I put you through when you were young, and basically all of it, because I have to be honest and say that I think I was very mean to you. That wasn't a very general, well, it was kind of a general apology, but it, and again, it wasn't, because that was exactly the what I wanted to hear him say. Because something I've been struggling with all my life is the fact that I don't own my own opinions. I don't own anything. Kind of, it's like, I don't know if my opinions even matter, or and I always set others' opinions above mine. Even if I try to be myself in a situation, it's like, if someone comes to me with, you know, something, I take them more seriously than my own opinion and my own version of the story. And I've become better at this. My father is a person that I do love now. I love him. And it's like, I don't know how to say this without starting to cry, but you know, it's like, I finally have a father to love. And that is amazing for me. That's the, talk about a small step for a man and a, yeah, whatever. this is one of the biggest things that ever happened to me. Yeah, I try always to be myself. And with the fellowship, this has developed into something more because of the toolbox that the fellowship has given me, especially the thing about being honest to myself and being myself. It's made it easier for me to accept who and what I am, and so I don't have to be going against what against my true nature, the old people pleasing thing, like when my father said that, you know, I was mean to you. I didn't people please him back and say that, yeah, it wasn't that bad. I said to him, like, yes, you were. You really were. And for me to say that in response to what he said, without being hateful and without being like, yeah, I was right, you know, just stating the fact that, yes, you were, it gave me a lot. Yeah. I have to talk a little bit about my friend Michael. what he said, it's true for me of him as well. He's shown me so many things in my recovery, and he is probably the first true friend that I found in this fellowship, because I've never really been in touch with my feelings. I remember when I got clean in 2007, and that was around when Dexter was a very popular TV series, and I was so into that series because I felt like Dexter. You know, I don't really have feelings. I have rage, and that's basically it. But you know, this has changed. Yeah. Oh, there. I think I. Yes. Now I got the back. Yeah. Michael was the person that I could get feelings for, because he is just who he is, and I don't know how to say this, but for me, relations were always something where we're always about what can I get out of it, you know, what can I get out of this, and I do get a lot out of it, don't get me wrong, but this was the first time I really started liking someone because of their personality, and because I had feelings, not romantic feelings, but, you know, feelings for someone else. And this, yeah. I know that I was supposed to talk for like 45 minutes, and I always have a lot of, after I speak, I always find a lot of stuff that I was supposed to say, and I forgot about them, and I guess that, yeah, I will probably have this today as well, but I'm usually a very short, I share very short. My first sponsor, he was the person who would use 1,000 words to describe a thing, and I would describe the same thing with 5 words, because that's quite basically how I am. And I know this is probably a bit short share, but I'm going to leave it there. So thank you for listening to me, and thank you for inviting me. It's been an honor. Thank you.